Their first foray into human space had been a terrific shock to the Kzinti. Human society had been peaceful for centuries, for so long that they had virtually forgotten war. But human interstellar ships used fusion-powered photon drives, launched by a combination of photon sail and asteroid-based laser cannon. So the Kzinti telepaths continued to report that the human worlds had no weapons at all, while giant laser cannon chopped at the Kzinti ships, and smaller mobile cannon darted in and out on the light pressure of their own beams. Slowed by unexpected human resistance and by the barrier of light speed, the war had run for decades instead of years, but the Kzinti would have won eventually. Except that an outsider ship had stumbled across the small human colony on We Made It. They had sold the mayor the secret of the outsider hyperdrive shunt on credit. We Made It had not known of the Kzinti war, but they learned of it fast enough when they had built a few faster-than-light ships. Against hyperdrive, the Kzinti hadn't a prayer. Later, the puppeteers had come to set up trading posts in human space. Man had been very lucky. 3 times he had met races technologically superior to him. The Kzinti would have crushed him without the outsider hyperdrive. The outsiders, again, were clearly his superiors, but they wanted nothing that man could give them except supply bases and information, and these they could buy. In any case, the outsiders, fragile beings of helium-2 metabolism, were too vulnerable to heat and gravity to make good warriors. And the puppeteers, powerful beyond dreams, were too cowardly. Who had built the ring world? And were they warriors? Months later, Louis was to see Speaker's Lie as his personal turning point. He might have backed out then, on Teela's behalf, of course. The ring world was terrifying enough as an abstraction in numbers. To think of approaching it in a spacecraft, of landing on it. But Louis had seen the Kzinn in terror of the puppeteer's flying worlds. Speaker's Lie was a magnificent act of courage. Could Louis show himself a coward now? He sat down and turned to face the glowing projection, and as his eyes brushed Teela, he silently cursed her for an idiot. Her face was alive with wonder and delight. She was as eager as the Kzinn pretended to be. Was she too stupid to be afraid? There was an atmosphere on the ring's inner side. Spectroanalysis showed the air to be as thick as Earth's, and of approximately the same composition. Definitely breathable to man and Kzinn and puppeteer. What kept it from blowing away was a thing to be guessed at. They would have to go and look. In the system of the G2 sun, there was nothing at all but the ring itself. No planets, no asteroids, no comets. "They cleaned it out," said Louis. "They didn't want anything to hit the ring." "Naturally," said the puppeteer with silver curls. "If something did strike the ring, it would strike at a minimum of 770 miles per second, the speed of rotation of the ring itself. No matter how strong the material of the ring, there would always be the danger of an object missing the outer surface and crossing the sun to strike the unprotected, inhabited inner surface." The sun itself was a yellow dwarf, somewhat cooler than Sol and a touch smaller. "We will need heat suits on the ring," said the Kzinn, rubbing it in, Louis thought.
"No," said Chiron. "The temperature of the inner surface is quite tolerable to all of our species."
"How would you know that?"
"The frequency of the infrared radiation emitted by the outer surface."
"You see me exposed as a fool."
"Not at all. We have been studying the ring since its discovery, while you have had a few eighths of minutes." "The infrared frequency indicates an average temperature of 290 degrees absolute, which of course applies to the inner as well as the outer surface of the ring. For you, this will be some 10 degrees warmer than optimum, speaker to animals. For Louis and Teela, it is optimum." "Do not let our attention to details mislead or frighten you," Chiron added. "We would not permit a landing unless the ring engineers themselves insisted. We merely wish you to be ready for any eventuality."
"You don't have any detail of surface formations?"
"Unfortunately, no. The resolving power of our instruments is insufficient."
"We can do some guessing," said Teela. "The 30-hour day-night cycle, for instance. Their original world must have turned that fast. Do you suppose that's their original system?"
We assume that it is, since they apparently did not have hyperdrive, said Chiron. But presumably they could have moved their world to another system, using their own techniques.
And should have, the Kazin rumbled, rather than destroy their own system in the course of building their ring. I think we will find their own system somewhere nearby, as denuded of worlds as this one. They would have used terraforming techniques to settle all of the worlds of their own system before adapting this more desperate expedient.
Teela said, desperate?
Then, when they had finished building their ring around the sun, they would have been forced to move all their worlds into this system to transfer their populations. Maybe not, said Louis. They might have used big STL ships to settle their ring if it was close enough to their own system.
Why desperate?
They looked at her.
I would have thought they built the ring for...
Teela floundered.
Because they wanted to.
For kicks? For scenery? Finnegal's fist! Teela, think of the resources they'd have to divert. Remember, they must have had a hell of a population problem. By the time they needed the ring for living room, they probably couldn't afford to build it. They built it anyway because they needed it.
Hmm, said Teela, looking puzzled. Nessus returns, said Chiron.
Without another word, the puppeteer turned and trotted away into the park. Chapter 7 Stepping Discs.
That was rude, said Teela.
Chiron doesn't want to meet Nessus, didn't I tell you? They think Nessus is crazy.
They're all crazy.
Well, they don't think so, but that doesn't make you wrong. Still want to go?
Teela's answer was the same uncomprehending look she'd given him when he tried to explain Whiplash of the Heart.
You still want to go, Louis confirmed sadly.
Sure, who wouldn't? What are the puppeteers afraid of?
I understand that, said Speaker to Animals. The puppeteers are cowards, but I fail to see why they insist on knowing more than they do. Louis, they have already passed the ringed sun, traveling at nearly light speed. Those who built the ring assuredly did not have faster-than-light travel. Thus, they can be no danger to the puppeteers, now or ever. I fail to understand our role in this matter.
It figures.
Must I take that as an insult?
No, of course not. It's just that we keep running up against population problems. Why should you understand?
Quite so. Explain, if you please.
Louis had been scanning the tame jungle for a glimpse of Nessus.
Nessus could probably tell this better. Too bad. Okay, imagine a trillion puppeteers on this world. Can you do it? I can smell them individually. The very concept makes me itch.
Now, imagine them on the ring world. Better, yes?
Yes. With more than 8^7 power times as much room. But still I fail to understand. Do you suppose the puppeteers plan conquest? But how would they transfer themselves to the ring afterward? They do not trust spacecraft.
I don't know. They don't make war, either. That's not the point. The point is the ring world safe to live on? You see? Maybe they're thinking of building their own ring worlds. Maybe they expect to find an empty one out there in the clouds of Magellan. Not an unreasonable hope, by the way. But it doesn't matter. They have to know if it's safe before they do anything. Here comes Nessus.
Teela stood up and moved to the invisible wall.
He looks drunk. Do puppeteers get drunk?
Nessus wasn't trotting. He came tippy-toe, circling a 4-foot chrome-yellow feather with exaggerated wariness, moving 1 foot at a time, while his flat head darted this way and that. He had almost reached the lecture dome when something like a large black butterfly settled on his rump. Nessus screamed like a woman, leapt forward as if clearing a high fence. He landed rolling. When he stopped rolling, he remained curled into a ball, with his back arched and his legs folded, and his heads and necks tucked between his forelegs. Louis was running. Depressive cycle, he shouted over his shoulder. By luck and memory, he found the entrance in the invisible dome. He darted out into the park. All the flowers smelled like puppeteer. If all the life of the puppeteer world had the same chemical basis, how could Nessus take nourishment from warm carrot juice? Louis followed a right-angle zigzag of manicured dusty orange hedge and came upon the puppeteer. He knelt beside him. It's Louis, he said. You're safe.
He reached gently into the tangled mop over the puppeteer's skull and scratched gently. The puppeteer jerked at the touch, then settled down. This was a bad one. No need to make the puppeteer face the world just yet. Louis asked, "Was that thing dangerous, the one that landed on you?"